everyone. Welcome back to the Science and Religion Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Seth Brown, and with me is...
Colin Turpin. Welcome back, everyone.
Yes, we are really excited. Man, I feel like I always start out this podcast saying the same thing.
It's a good
time
to do
a podcast. Welcome back. I'm Seth, you're Colin, and then I always say, we're really excited.
I'm so excited.
But that's the truth. We're actually really excited. We love doing this. So today we've got, really excited about this one. And I just want to do a brief review of kind of the trajectory of this podcast and some of the episodes we've been doing. If you were with us at episode one and you listened to our intro podcast, you heard Colin and I kind of give you the schedule of what we wanted over the next couple weeks as we were begin to release these episodes. We're going to do three episodes on kind of setting the stage for the discussions that we're going to have. So we did an intro pod, we talked about definitions, we did justified beliefs was another one. And then after that, we were going to do three episodes on kind of the big topics, the big controversial topics out there. So we did. We talked about universal origins, we talked about evolution, we talked about transsexuality and homosexuality. And so those were kind of the three big topics. And now we're hitting the point in our schedule where we're going to look back on all that we've talked about and kind of reflect and begin to ask ourselves some questions that you might be asking yourselves. And so today we are going to be talking about humanity and inherent value. Is man inherently valued? Do we have intrinsic value? And so that's kind of one of the reflection questions that we'll be starting on. We got a couple more episodes, so continue to stick with us. I think that was all I had for the introduction.
Colin, yeah, let's just jump right into it.
Let me ask you this: why are we even bothering with this question? Isn't it intuitive, Colin, that humanity has value? Isn't it intuitive? Can't we all reason that for ourselves?
Oh well, I'm glad you asked. I'm sure maybe to some of our viewers that is a very clear and obvious thing. They're like, yeah, of course people are worth, you know, value, worth loving, worth caring for and paying money for and things like that, like obviously. But I think by the end of this podcast you might have a more whole idea of all the different ideas out there. Mm-hmm. And really what this is we were talking about this beforehand, is this ends up kind of being a natural progression of a lot of these worldviews.
Right.
And so our hope for you today is as you consider your own worldview and where you're at and thinking about humanity and about its value, that hopefully those are consistent. And if they're not consistent, you get to think about it and do some reworking. So, we'll get into that a little bit later. But first, we're going to start by defining what are humans.
Right. Well, that's a very natural thing to do.
Yeah.
Because if I were just to ask you, hey, Colin, is this thing valuable? What's the first thing you got to ask me in return?
What is this thing?
Right. We got to know what we're talking about before we can ascribe value to it. Yeah. So the question then becomes, what is an individual person? What is a man, a woman? So I think you've got some thoughts for us, Colin. Why don't you lead off and can kind of bounce ideas off each other?
Sure. This is something that I've been thinking through and processing through for about 2 years. and basically it is the question of the seat of our humanness. So, or essentially another way to say it is, where do you abide? Where are you? What is really you?
Mm-hmm.
If you lose an arm and a leg, are you still you? Well, I think most people would say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so a good way to maybe determine where you think you are in your personhood is a great thought experiment that was done by a philosopher.
I love these thought experiments.
And so I should have looked up who said it. I don't remember, but it's essentially you. So here you are. You have been captured by a mad scientist. And the mad scientist captures you, and he also captures a inmate on death row. So he takes both of you and kidnaps you and straps you to a mind-switching machine.
Oh, gosh.
And the mad scientist talks to you and says, I'm going to let you decide who goes free. One of you is going to go get the electric chair, and the other is going to go three. And then he says, tonight I'm going to switch your minds, and then tomorrow you will receive your fate. And so how the thought experiment goes is, if you believe that I am ultimately abiding in this physical body, if that is where the seat of Colin is, if I'm this flesh, this physical body, then I'm going to choose my body as the one who goes free.
Right.
And the inmate is the one who gets the chair. But if I believe that I'm my non-physical mind that gets switched, I would say the other one. And so however you answer that question may be kind of where you believe the seat of humanness is. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So historically, humans have tried to answer this in a lot of different ways, and no one has yet, we've yet to determine exactly where it is. So in ancient times, let's say in Bible times, throwing in the religion part, mm-hmm. whenever you see the word, a lot of times it's translated as soul or sometimes as heart. The literal translation is liver, mm-hmm. because they used to think that your mind and thoughts and everything was controlled by your liver, which is kind of funny to say to your crush, I love you from the bottom of my liver.
Yeah, right? I think that'd go really well over on a date.
And so more recently, more in the medieval times, the Romantic era, people started talking in terms of heart, right? So you see this a lot in Shakespeare and things like that, this heart. Somehow that is where your romantic feelings are from. And so people were starting to think that the heart maybe is what controls you. And then, of course, more recently, if you're unaware, we have now kind of fixated on the brain. Everything is neuro this, neuro that. The brain is a big deal. And so we've been looking for it. But kind of the interesting thing is something that I've been learning about that is fascinating is something called the binding problem, which is essentially your conscious experience, how you perceive the world is we are having, like I said earlier, we are having a hard time determining what is creating it. We can't physically trace it back to our brain, even though our brain is basically just 3 pounds of jelly with millions of firing neurons all the time. Somehow that induces this conscious experience that we have. And there's an interesting disconnect there that we don't really know exactly how or why. And if you want to have your mind blown, you can look further into that. It gets very deep into physics very mm-hmm. quickly. That's a talk for another time, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
So, so let's back up. So you're thinking about what makes you, your consciousness, your personality, things like that. So I looked up this week, what are the aspects that makes a human human? So if we can't really determine scientifically, okay, this part of me is where I abide, it's debated, it's not exactly sure. Well, let's look at some of the characteristics maybe of mm-hmm. what makes human human.
Yeah.
And so I found things like the ability to use tools, our language, our foresight, our ability to kind of read minds, our high intelligence, ideas of culture and morality. Those are kind of the big things. Although more than half of those, there have been studies where other animals have been seen to do these things.
Yeah.
So for tools, for example, a sea otter will use a rock to crack open clams. And that is, by definition, a tool being used. So, mm-hmm. There's a lot of tug and pull. These aren't absolute. But in general, those things, language, foresight, intelligence, culture, morality, things mm-hmm. like that are some things that I think most people would say, for the most part, are distinctly human things.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave us? The modern view, as far as psychology goes, of our right. theoretical perspective, goes something like this. As far as we can tell, you are your brain. Your brain is a computer. It makes rapid logical decisions based off previous information. I'll say it again. You are your brain. Your brain is a computer. It makes rapid logical decisions based off of previous information. And so that is kind of the best way that we have kind of summarized what being a human is.
Yeah, interesting stuff right there, man. So I want to talk about that last phrase, that last kind of definition we gave for you, because I think there's we can find a lot of stuff if we kind of explore and poke and prod that. So I would also like to kind of back up and approach the idea of what makes you from more of a physics standpoint, more of like a kind of a historical physics. And I think maybe this might lend some insight into how we've arrived at this idea that you are a brain. You are your brain. Your brain is a computer that makes rapid logical decisions.
Yeah.
And maybe challenge that as we kind of continue the conversation. So if you, again, travel back in history to a time period where what I'm going to call classical physics reigned. So the idea of classical physics is Newtonian gravity, the laws of electrodynamics. Imagine really complex equations that could, if you had enough of the variables, you could kind of predict what was going to happen. And so as humanity continued to progress scientifically, as we gained more knowledge about the world, as our paradigm shifted, the idea of what man was rapidly coming to the firm conclusion that we are nothing but kind of a computer program, a determined computer program that has been set up by nature, by our experiences as kids. And so we're kind of determined creatures, that we really don't have this idea of free will. And so because the idea was that in classical physics, if you had enough information about the current system, say for example you had a rock and you threw it off a cliff, if you had enough information about the weight of the rock, the shape of the rock, the drag of the wind on the rock, the humidity, you could predict the exact flight of that rock as it flies off the cliff. And so if you begin to extrapolate that to an even larger system, say the earth, or maybe a town or a city or humans, the hope was in classical physics that as we continue to learn these laws, if we have enough information about the current state of man, the current state of this earth, theoretically, we could predict the future. So in a sense, there's this idea of determinism. Well, something came along in the early 1900s, quantum mechanics came along and basically shattered shattered a lot of the hopes of scientists to be able to predict man, to predict the future of humankind and in that sort of sense. And essentially what happened was quantum mechanics is based on probability. So and it deals on quantum level. So think atomic nucleus. And essentially the idea goes is that we don't know for sure when an atomic nucleus is going to change. If it's an unstable nucleus, we don't know for sure when it's going to change. But we've got a probability. We have a reasonable probability that if you looked at it at this certain time, it would have decayed. It would have changed. But we don't know for sure until we look at it. We don't know for sure until we observe it. And so when scientists kind of made this discovery, they realized that there was something in the act of observing that in a sense, I want to be careful how I phrase this. It doesn't change the system. It doesn't determine the system. But there's something in the act of observing that impacts the physical world. That's and so a lot of scientists were really uncomfortable with this idea, and it really changed a lot of the idea of what is man, what is the mind, because we were no longer capable of saying for sure that everything about the mind is predictable. And so all that to say, if we return to your kind of definition of man, I think that's the current paradigm of what man is.
Right.
But there's some holes rapidly forming
in
this paradigm. So again, the paradigm is you are a brain. Your brain is a computer capable of making logical decisions.
Based off of previous information. Yep.
So that's the current paradigm under classical kind of physics and maybe as we begin to discover more and more. But that's rapidly changing. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I think there's a lot more to it than your brain is just a computer. But before we continue along that trail, I'd like to get back on track and maybe transition to this idea of, okay, in light of what we think man is, can we ascribe value to him? And I think at this time it'd be good to kind of talk about some of the worldviews involved in this.
Yeah, let's do that.
So why don't you tackle those worldviews?
Okay.
And then we'll talk about, according to those worldviews and your answer to the question we just asked of what is the individual person, how does that affect the value we place on humans?
So if you think back, this is going to be, oh golly, 4 weeks ago now, whenever we were, maybe 5 weeks ago, when we were talking about these different, setting up these different worldviews, we'll do a quick recap of one side. As far as the value argument goes, it falls basically into two camps. And one camp is metaphysical naturalism, which is the view that the natural world is all that there is, and it is, in a sense, kind of an enclosed case. Everything can be explained by what we see naturally. And so that is one camp. And the other camp is of the worldview of supernaturalism, which is saying there are other forces outside of the natural world that are influencing it, or creating it, or whatever. And so, generally, of the metaphysical naturalism, the only the natural world one, it is, if you really follow it to its end conclusions, it becomes harder and harder to justify or explain some special or some intrinsic value placed on humans. If indeed, let's say, evolution is true, if all of these sequences and systems that have been building up to you, the modern person, if they have been accidental, random, non-directional, then in essence, you are valueless.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assumption to say?
No, I certainly think so. And I'd like to clarify, because I was thinking about this earlier, when we say evolution, I think it'd be good to clarify that it's the idea of evolution by natural causes alone.
Sure.
Because I think there's room for evolution within a supernatural belief.
Okay.
But if you hold to evolution by natural causes alone,
I see.
Then the result of that is going to be a humanity that is no different than the trees, because they're composed of the same atoms. They just happen to get composed in the right way after a long series of time to produce this experience of consciousness.
Right.
But what difference do those atoms have than these atoms over here?
Right.
They just happen to be in the right place at the right time to produce the right thing.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, there's really no basis within metaphysical naturalism. Again, metaphysical naturalism is the general belief that all that there is just natural. It's the enclosed box. if that's all that there is, then it's really hard to find value for man. Now, if we look on the other side, the flip side, within supernaturalism, I think we get more of a varied explanation for what is man and does man have value. If you kind of take a survey of different religions, you'll get tons of different answers, right? So if you look at more of the Eastern religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, it's the idea, I think generally speaking, the idea is that there's this one impersonal supreme being force.
Consciousness.
Thing. Yep. Being that has somehow manifested itself into you, the individual. Now, the problem with that is that you as the individual don't really have value apart from this supreme being. And your goal is to lose your value as an individual, right, and return to that supreme being where there's kind of a state of nothingness. So even within supernatural views, you kind of see an explanation of what is man and is man valuable as saying, well, man is really not that important, and man doesn't really have value.
Okay, so podcast over. We have determined
it. Podcast over. Sort of. We can, we'll spend a little more time talking, I think, on the innate value of humanity, right? I mean, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Well, so we didn't talk about
so, that. Yeah, so what are some other super, what are some other supernaturals that might say it is valuable?
So for example, if you look at Judaism, Christianity, theism, mm-hmm. or not theism, I meant to say Islam,
mm-hmm.
which they're all theistic worldviews. They all emphasize the idea of a personal God who created personal beings to, in a sense, eventually experience a relationship with the individual. Or let me set it up this way. There's this supreme being, right? The supreme being, divine being that we don't really understand fully. Within Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, that supreme being has created man, the individual, with value to eventually have a relationship, a unique relationship, a I-thou relationship, right?
So it sounds like you're saying is that they don't... in those worldviews, the value isn't because of the human part of us, it's because of the being that gave it to them.
Right. Yeah. That's. I would say that's a fair statement. What do you have? You have any thoughts on?
No. I think that sums it up pretty well. You hear a lot in the Christian worldview of we are made in the image of God.
Right.
There's some debate of what exactly that means, and like I said earlier, our value. If humans have some special intrinsic value. It comes because it has been given to us
mm-hmm.
as we point back to whatever made us.
Yeah.
And if we are made by an accident of space dust a long, long, long time ago, then there's no value in that. But if we were made ultimately by mm-hmm. a being that is very valuable, then okay, well, we get some of that value too.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the place that we're at of these two big positions,
right?
Of it goes kind of back to these worldviews, and
mm-hmm.
and this is the interesting part, I think, is that just intuitively, as you know, when I talk with people or hear a lot of my friends say, I think it's easy to assume that life is valuable. I think mm-hmm. a lot of people may have that assumption that humans are valuable, humans are worth fighting for. I mean, you see. A great example of this is all of the injustice in the world and the outcry against injustice. Mm-hmm. And that I think in underlying that is some assumption that these humans deserve this because right. they're valuable.
Right.
And so if your worldview doesn't line up with that, then you have some thinking to do.
Absolutely.
Because that could be problematic if you believe, you know, in a source for humans that doesn't lend to us having value, but then you're holding us as valuable, then something...
There's a disconnect
there. Right, yeah.
Well, and I think that this goes back to... We did that podcast about... We reflected on the Timothy Keller lecture
uh-huh.
and how we talked a lot about, okay, well, where do a lot of these values come from? And Keller argued that they stemmed from the Bible, right? The teachings of the Bible. And that includes Christianity and Judaism kind of as religions and their belief about humanity's value. But no, I think that's a really good point. You know, if you don't believe in a supernatural, not a supernatural being, but if you don't believe in something outside of just humanity, I think you have to ask yourself, where does humanity get the basis for these morals, right? Where is it just something that humanity itself comes up with? In which case, what makes one person's value, definition of meaning, definition of value, better than another person's mm-hmm. definition?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are comfortable with saying, yeah, you know, like that's where we are. Everybody's got their own kind of definition of value and meaning. And a lot of society is okay with that, is okay with living in this really kind of... this state of flux of change where there's really no standard by which we can hold things to.
Right.
So yeah, do you have any thoughts about that, Corey?
No, I think you said it well. It's an interesting experiment, or I think it's a good practice to evaluate where you're at.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and so I'd also like to say this: if you look at a lot of what metaphysical naturalists are saying, they're not really trying to find value in humanity. They've kind of reached the logical conclusion of that, and have come to the conclusion that, you know, if I hold to this truth that there is only natural things in this world, that man is a product of evolution by natural causes alone, then I really don't have a good basis for ascribing humanity value. The questions that they're trying to answer are not is, does man have value, but how do you cope with that? Can we cope with that? How do you live in a world where there's really no value?
And I read an article not too long ago that said it was a very much comfort. This is someone who's been wrestling with this. Absolutely. And they said they are comforted by the fact that there is no value. And they said, knowing that this is the end and nothing matters, well, it lets me cling to the ones I love closer.
Yeah.
And it lets me live life better, because they truly believed that's it. And,
yeah.
And you know, you get to soak up all you can while you have it.
Yeah. So that sounds like existentialism.
Right.
You
know, sure.
The worldview there.
Uh-huh.
So there are ways of I think what we're driving, Colin and I are driving at, is we've examined kind of these two big worldviews, mm-hmm. supernaturalism, naturalism, and the question for naturalism, supernaturalism kind of has, I wouldn't say supernaturalism has things figured out, but they've got answers, mm-hmm. in a sense. They've got, mm-hmm. answers for why man has value and how do you cope with that. Naturalism is really trying to figure out, how do you cope with that?
Yeah.
What do you do in light of that? And so my question to the listener, the skeptic, somebody who's not, who doesn't believe in supernaturalism, or even for the person who does, is, you know, how do you deal with the meaninglessness of life? What's your answer? Is it a good answer? Is it gonna satisfy you for your life? Maybe it is. Maybe so, but I think there might be better answers out there if you take a hard look at other worldviews. But again, that's me. I want to end with this, and Colin, you might have something to say. There's a great so for my friends in the supernatural worldview, in the Christian worldview, there's a great album out by this artist. His name's Father John Misty, and it is, I think, I haven't listened to any other album that I think perfectly captures somebody who is coping with the logical results of metaphysical naturalism. He sings a bunch of, all of his songs in there deal with this idea of, okay, you know what? I look around and this is all kind of a joke. It's all kind of meaningless, but I'm still going to find meaning in it somehow. Mm-hmm. And if you're really, so I bring that up to say, I think it's hard sometimes for people in the supernaturalist camp, Christian camp, whatever, to say, like, what? Like, what do you mean you don't believe life has meaning? How can you live? Well, people do it. You know, people do
absolutely.
It. And I think if you listen to this album, that's going to give you a really good perspective of saying, like, oh, this is how, okay. And the reason I bring that up is because, again, this is the reason behind why Colin and I are doing this podcast is we want to promote discussion. We don't want people to talk past each other.
Yes.
We want people to see each other's experiences and be able to say, okay, that's why you're saying this. That's why you're doing this and believing this. And so if you're, again, in the Christian camp, supernaturalist camp, whatever, and you don't really understand how people could live a life without meaning or believing that there is no meaning, check out this guy's album. Father John Misty is his name. The album's called Pure Comedy. The title track, Pure Comedy, you got to be ready, because he's not very friendly to Christians, is the truth of the matter. But I think he's got a good perspective that would help a lot of Christians understand the viewpoints of skeptics. So I think that's all we got. Hopefully there was something of value in this podcast. Colin, you have any final thoughts?
No, I hope that we have at least intrigued everyone or got your gears turning a little bit, thinking about what are humans, what makes you, and really hopefully trying to align your worldview with your view of human value. And if those align, awesome. Great job. Go tell people about it. Yeah. If they don't, get to thinking about it.
Yeah, for sure.
And let us know in the comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, send us. I don't think we've gotten an email yet.
I have not.
Okay, I haven't gotten an email. I'm a little disappointed. please just send us an email. What was it you said last week or 2 weeks ago when we did the evolution podcast? Mm-hmm. You were like, just send us an email. Say,
just tell us anything.
We're not that desperate for feedback, but we'd really appreciate it.
And thank you guys once again for tuning in. Mm-hmm. Next week, we are going to grapple with some more of these questions, absolutely, more of these kind of implications of some of these big questions.
The two things that we kind of have on our docket. Ah, very nice.
Yeah.
Is what do you make of evil in this world?
Yes.
Why is there pain and suffering?
Yep.
And then also, what does science make of beauty? Mm-hmm. Or how do we understand what goodness is? So there might be some overlap with those two topics. Regardless, we got some good stuff coming up for you. So we will see you next time.
Next time.
Catch you later.